Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 7, entitled The Puranic Literatures, Text Number 14. Raksha vate vat areha. Vishvasyanu yuge yuge. Tiryan martyarshi deveshu. Anyante yaistrai dvishaha. Rakshasyuta vatareha. Vishvasyanu yuge yuge. Tiryan martyarshi deveshu. Anyante yaistrai dvishaha. Raksha. Protection. Achyuta avatar. Of the incarnations of Lord Achyuta. Iha. The activities. Vishvasya. Of this universe. Anu yuge yuge. In each age. Tiryak. Among the animals. Martya. Human beings. Rishi. Sages. Deveshu. And demigods. Hanyante. Are killed. Yai. By which incarnations? Traid Vishaha. The Daityas who are enemies of Vedic culture. Translation by the servants of the Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. In each age, the infallible Lord appears in this world among the animals, human beings, sages, and demigods. By his activities in these incarnations, he protects the universe and kills the enemies of Vedic culture. Thank you. Translation responsibly. In each age, the infallible Lord appears. In this world, among the animals, human beings, sages, and demigods. By his activities in these incarnations, he protects the universe and kills the enemies of Vedic culture. Purport. The protective activities of the Lord, indicated by the word Raksha, constitute one of the 10 fundamental topics of a Mahapurana or a great Puranic literature. Om Agyanati Varandasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshur Mumritamina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Narayanam Namaskritam Naram Jaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswati Vyasam Tato Jayamudim Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So now we are in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Puranic Literatures. So, this text here is describing one of the 10 fundamental topics of a Mahapurana. So in the previous few classes we have been hearing of the fundamental topics of a Mahapurana. So there are two kinds of Puranas. There's the Purana and then there's the Mahapurana. So the Mahapurana obviously has more details or more topics in it. So an ordinary Purana will have 5 topics, whereas a Mahapurana has 10. And Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be a Mahapurana. So also in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, I think chapter 10, text number 1, the outline of these 10 topics is given, and also in text number 11, text number 10. So, O Brahmana, authorities on the matter understand a Purana to contain 10 characteristic topics. So, these topics are again described in the 12th canto. So now here we are in the, we are studying about the fourth topic of a Mahapurana. So these four, these ten topics are very briefly being described again in the 12th canto. So we see that these ten topics are described in each canto to different degrees and to different degrees of emphasis. It's not that you'll find one of these topics, that each topic will be assigned to a particular canto. It's not like that. All of these ten topics are in all the 12 cantos to different degrees of analysis and emphasis. So here, the fourth topic is being discussed in this verse. So the fourth topic is Raksha. Raksha, in other words, means protection. So the first topic was Sarga, or the creation of this universe. So, and then the second one was Visarga, or the secondary creation. So the primary creation is done by Mahavishnu. So Mahavishnu glances upon Prakriti, and all these universes come out of his skin, of the pores of his skin, and then in each of these universes he enters as the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And then from his lotus navel, a lotus-like stem emanates, and there's a lotus flower, and Brahma is situated on top of that. And then Brahma does the secondary creation, or the Visarga. So Brahma creates the 8.4 million species of life and populates all the planets. So all this is contained within the stem of it's contained within the stem arising from the navel of Mahavishnu. So that's, so that is Sarga and Visarga. And then the third topic is Vritti. Vritti means maintenance. And then the fourth one is Raksha, protection. Protection by sustenance. So here it is described how the Lord is appearing through his various incarnations in order to protect the living entities. So we see that actually, so we are reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a Purana. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is part of the Vedas. So the Vedic literatures are very, very vast, and the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Mahabharata and the Samhitas are considered to be the fifth Veda. So we understand how that the Vedas actually emanate from the breathing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Vedas basically contain codes of direction to perform sacrifice. So they contain directions in order to perform sacrifice, ultimately for the pleasure of Krishna. So we see that the Vedas contain different types of sacrifices. They are sacrifices for the demigods. So there's the Vedas are divided into four, and all the, there's basically four divisions of sacrifice. But the whole aim of this working directions of sacrifice is actually to please Krishna. So we see in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there are different sacrifices recommended for different demigods. You know, the whole idea behind that is that if you don't follow the Vedic direction, one will be leading a life of vikarma activities. Any activity which is not in conjunction with the Vedic literature is a vikarma or a sinful action. So the whole purpose of the Vedic literatures or the sacrifices is that because we have this propensity to enjoy separately from Krishna, and Krishna knows that, Krishna knows our psychology, why we are here in this material world, to enjoy separately from Him. And in order to facilitate that, this material world is created. But still Krishna does not want us to suffer. So therefore Krishna knows we want to enjoy, therefore these codes or directions of sacrifices are given so that one can enjoy in a regulated way. But at the same time one does not degrade oneself into the lower species of life. Because if one does fall down into the lower species, the evolution to the human form of life takes a very long time. And then we have to suffer in the material world. And the human form of life is a junction in which we can make a solution to this problem of samsara. So that's the whole idea behind the Vedic text. So just like in a state, if we are, you know, we're living in Australia, if we don't follow the laws of this country, then basically we are in trouble. You know, you get thrown in jail. So similarly, if we don't follow the laws given by Krishna in the Vedas, then one leads a life of vikarma activity. So that's why these various divisions of sacrifices are given. But ultimately, the whole idea behind that is to please Krishna. Is to attain to the platform of Krishna consciousness. So now if we look at the history of the Vedas, or if we go back 5,000 years ago, and if we turn to the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there we see Vyasadev, he was in Badrik Ashram, and he was sitting by the banks of the river Saraswati, and he was engaged in meditation, and he was actually, he could foresee the anomalies of the age of Kali. So because of, by dint of his spiritual vision, he could foresee the anomalies of this age of Kali. He could basically foresee that how even matter will lose its potency. In other words, for example, how matter will lose its potency, like, you know, the land won't be very, very potent. So for example, in this day and age, the land doesn't grow enough grains. You know, the cows will not give enough milk. And people will be very, very disturbed. They will not be situated in the mode of goodness. They will be rather situated in the modes of passion and ignorance. So they will be very, very unstable, very restless. So he could foresee this, and because he is very compassionate, so he saw that basically the deterioration of everything material and a reduction in the duration of life. And then he decided, because before the Veda was spoken, in other words, the knowledge was passed by oral, you know, reception. But then he thought, in order to purify the occupations of all people, in order for people to have a progressive life, he decided to divide the one Veda into four. So he was meditating like that, and then he got up and he then divided the one Veda into four, and then he assigned the four divisions of the Vedas, or the four divisions of sacrifice, to his various disciples. And his various, that list is also mentioned in the previous few chapters, and also in the first canto it's mentioned who he assigned which Veda to, and then they further assigned it to their disciples. So there was disciples and grand disciples and so on and so forth. In this way, all the branches of knowledge actually came forth. So he did so that basically, again, so people can live because we have this tendency to enjoy separately from Krishna, so people can basically live a progressive life. That was his whole idea. So therefore, before, originally there was only the one Veda, which is the Yajur Veda. So then it was divided into four: the Rig, Yajur, Sama and Atharva Vedas. But even we see that in order to study the Vedic literature, one has to be a Brahmana. By qualification, one has to be a Brahmana. Or in other words, one has to be situated in the mode of goodness. Now when sometimes people hear this, they have a great problem. Then they say that basically this is the monopoly of the Brahminical class. Because you are saying that the Vedas are meant to be studied by one who is a Brahmana. In other words, it is the monopoly of the Brahminical class. Or the other flip side is, you don't have to be Brahmana, anyone can study it. So there are some people who claim that just by birthright we are a Brahmana, and therefore we are eligible to study the Vedic literature. And then on the other side, some people are saying, you know, we reject all that, anyone can study it. Why only a Brahmana? But we see, even to understand something material, one needs some prerequisites, or one needs some qualifications. You just can't go in university without going through year 1 to year 12. There are some prerequisites to enter into university. So similarly, to study the Vedic literature, one has to be in the mode of goodness. Otherwise, one cannot understand. And you could even see that people won't be in the mode of goodness, that they'll be rather situated in the modes of passion and ignorance. And therefore, he compiled the Mahabharata and the Puranas. So it says, Sri Shudra Dvija Bandhu Nam. So he compiled the Puranas for the Shudras or the twice born and the women. So in this day and age, Kalau Shudra Sambhav, actually everyone is born a Shudra. You know, no one is born in the mode of goodness. This day and age is saturated by the modes of passion and ignorance. So we all take birth as Shudras. Right? So we have no qualification to understand the Vedas. You know, there's no scope, there's no hope. And then there are the Dvija Bandhus, those who are born in Brahmanis, but are born without any proper samskaras. So, you know, it is said that if one is not conceived out of Garbhadhan samskara, he is basically situated in the mode of passion and ignorance. And if one does not go through all the samskaras. So, simply taking birth in a Brahmanical family by birthright, then one is a Dvija Bandhu. In other words, one is in a Brahmanical family, but one does not have the, you know, qualifications. And then Sri Shudra Dvija Bandhuna. So women, the Shudras, and the twice born. So we have no scope of anyone has no scope of understanding the Vedic literature. So he could foresee this, and therefore he compiled the Mahabharata. So the Mahabharata basically explains the Vedas, the four divisions of Vedas, in the form of stories, to put it very simply. And then the Mahabharata has the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in it. So that's like giving medicine to a child coated with sweet candy. Of course, Bhagavad Gita is not bitter, it is sweet. But because people are initially, sometimes people are not able to appreciate it. So it is given in the form of through Mahabharata. So the whole idea behind Mahabharata is that people read the Bhagavad Gita rather than getting hung up in all the intricacies of the Mahabharata. That's the whole idea. And also we see that Vyasadeva, then he further on, so he compiled the Vedic literature, divided into four. And then he compiled the Vedanta Sutra. So the Vedanta Sutra is the delineation of the impersonal Brahman. Basically, that's what it is. So it delineates the Brahman feature of the Absolute Truth in great detail. So even after doing that, he was not happy. He was not satisfied. So what to speak of us? So this is, and he said, you know, I followed the disciplic succession. I've followed all the vows. You know, I've done everything in accord with the Vedic literature. Still, I'm not happy. So, you know, sometimes people say that, you know, I'm very happy. I'm satisfied. You know, how can they be satisfied if the incarnation of God, Vyasadeva, was not satisfied? So, you know, no one else can be satisfied, because his spiritual master explained that because he did not sufficiently glorify the spotless character of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, therefore he was not happy. So it is said that one needs to glorify Krishna even to maintain the status quo of Brahman, of Brahma Bhuta, or the impersonal liberation. Because you see, there's dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So these are the progressive stages in a civilized human life. So when one gets frustrated of material activities, one takes to moksha or liberation, which is also another form of sense gratification. But in the impersonal liberation, there is a feeling of satisfaction because one is not suffering. But in order to maintain that feeling of satisfaction, again, one has to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Then one will be able to maintain that, and then one will actually experience real bliss. So there's this verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 5, Text Number 10. Tad Vayasam Tirtham, that those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered by saintly persons to be like unto a place of pilgrimage for crows. Since the all perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental abode, they do not derive any pleasure there. So basically, Narad Muni was comparing what he had compiled to a place of pilgrimage for crows. So in the modern context, in other words, he was referring to literatures which which deal with the body and the mind. So we see, if you go to any news agent or you go to the post office, there is a stand where all the magazines are there. What do they all deal with? It's just junk. So they all deal with very sensuous topics. There are pictures of women, or there you see the cars over there, you know, car magazines, auto magazines, or gardening, or you know, what else is there?
Stationery,
yeah. In terms of literature, so it's basically, you know, sensuous topics. So that is compared to a place of pilgrimage for crows. So people of crow-like mentality, they like to hang around such kind of places. And all the libraries we see, the state library or, you know, whichever library, is just a bunch of, you know, trash. Of course, there is, sometimes you find the Srimad Bhagavatam by Swami Prabhupada and the Bhagavad Gita also there. So there is some spotless literature. But generally, 99.9999%, it is all junk. And they're cutting so much trees for the production of this junk literature, which does not ultimately give one any true benefit. But devotees are compared to swans. They like to, swans hang around, you know, lakes and very beautiful places. So devotees, and even if you see the way devotees dress, it is, and the way karmis dress, it's, you know, it is a, you know, devotees dress in bright colors, and so it is actually very, very pleasing. Their devotees are swan-like. So now if we see the Srimad Bhagavatam, now the Srimad Bhagavatam is also one of the Puranas. So we know there are actually 18 Puranas, classified according to the three modes of nature. So does that mean that the Srimad Bhagavatam is for less intelligent people? Sri Shudra Dvijabandhu Nam? No, we see that the Srimad Bhagavatam is even read by the Paramahamsas. So what's that second verse of the first canto, first chapter? Dharma Projita Kaitava Atro Parama Nirmat Saranam Satam. So Nirmat Saranam, that Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for the pure devotees of the Lord. So the translation of that verse is, completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within the heart. So we see here that Srimad Bhagavatam is adored and read by the Paramahamsas. So who is a Paramahamsa? A Paramahamsa is a person who is basically free from competitive sense gratification. So in this world, everybody is competing for material enjoyment or sense gratification. So we see even religion is performed for sense gratification. And Prabhupada gives example of, very simple example. You know, how people go to church or temple, you know, come and beg, you know, give me this, so I'll do something. Put $10 and expect something in return, $1 million or whatever. So if people can earn that money without going to temple and begging for sense gratification, then, you know, they reject going to the temple. That's what we saw, seen has happened in, you know, in the communist countries and even now, even in Western countries. Because people can achieve economic development without going to a religious institution. So therefore they say, what's the need of that? So we kick that out. So, you know, job is everything. So like that we can see. But Srimad Bhagavatam is glorified by the Paramahamsas, or devotees who are fully pure in heart, who have actually no attraction towards material sense gratification, because they are actually getting a spiritual rasa out of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we see the Atma Ramas like Shukdev Goswami, who had nothing to do with anything material, they were actually reading, he was actually speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam and he heard the Srimad Bhagavatam. This proves the fact that Srimad Bhagavatam is not mundane. It is beyond the three modes of nature. The Srimad Bhagavatam actually propounds the highest truth, Krishna, which is above the three modes of nature. Otherwise, you know, he was actually, Shukdev Goswami, when he was walking naked, he passed by this pond where some girls were, they were naked and they were taking a bath in the pond. So he was not at all agitated and he just, you know, walked by. But when Vyasdev followed his son, they immediately covered themselves. Of course, Vyasdev is also God, but because he was in the role of a grihastha, so therefore they acted like that. So this proves that because he's an Atma Rama and therefore he's taking interest in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which proves that he's actually deriving some other rasa in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because whatever we do, we are actually doing it because we are acquiring a taste in that activity. That taste or rasa is the motivating factor or drive in whatever we do. So, and it is mentioned that rasa can be exchanged only amongst members of the same species. So we see, we don't see, so rasas are exchanged between humans, dogs, members of the same species. But because ultimately we all are spirit soul and our connection is with the supreme spirit soul Krishna, therefore real rasa is exchanged between the minute spirit soul and the supreme spirit soul. So obviously he has to be deriving a superior taste, he has to be deriving a spiritual rasa, otherwise Shukdev Goswami won't take any interest in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we see that the Srimad Bhagavatam, because Krishna is the reservoir of all rasas, so we know there are 12 rasas, 5 primary and 7 secondary, and Krishna is the reservoir of all of these. So we all have a relationship with Krishna in one of these rasas. So when we perfect our Krishna consciousness, that kind of relationship is actually revealed to us. So Srimad Bhagavatam propounds the highest truth. So what is the highest truth? So the highest truth is to understand that the Bhagavan feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Bhagavan feature, and how Krishna is the source of all energies. So we understand the substance and the energies. And as one understands Krishna, one will naturally be, as one is established in one's true constitutional position as a servant of Krishna, one will be naturally free from all miseries. Because the moment we accept a material body, we are inflicted by the threefold miseries. So miseries caused by our own body and mind, by other living entities and by natural disturbances. So that doesn't mean that a devotee also, you know, this devotee doesn't encounter these problems. A devotee does encounter them, but he doesn't suffer. One who is situated in his true position as a servant of Krishna, in terms of realization, they also undergo through all that, but they actually do not suffer. So they see that as the arrangement of the Lord and as the mercy of the Lord, and they see that as that situation to make them stronger in the Krishna consciousness and for their own spiritual advancement. So in other words, they see the hand of Krishna for their purification. Whereas others who haven't realized that they are a servant of Krishna, we actually suffer. But and Srimad Bhagavatam is actually a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra by the same author, Vyasadev. So we see, after compiling all the Vedic literatures and even the Vedanta Sutra, Vyasadev, then he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, and Srimad Bhagavatam therefore is the natural commentation on the Vedanta Sutra. So therefore, all the Acharyas, Srila Prabhupada, have placed great emphasis on the study of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because that is the essence of the entire. So these two books are recommended for us. Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we should start with the Bhagavad Gita, and then once we've done our Bhakti Shastras, then we can do our Bhakti Vaibhav. So we can understand this systematically, the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's interestingly enough, as it's mentioned, Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for the Paramahamsas, but at the same time, one can become a Paramahamsa by submissively hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, though it is meant for the topmost person, but Srimad Bhagavatam uplifts the most fallen person to the position of the topmost person. And Srila Prabhupada also in his the prayers he composed on the Jaladuta on his way to America, he said, you know, what hope is there for these people who are basically, I'm just paraphrasing it, what hope is there for these people who are situated in the modes of passion and ignorance to get liberated? But if they simply pay heed to the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, they will attain all perfection. So we see how Srimad Bhagavatam can uplift the most fallen person to the topmost platform. So that is the potency of the Bhagavatam class. So attending the Bhagavatam class is not an ordinary thing. Of course, we have to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from the right source, somebody coming in the disciplic succession. Only then it will bear fruit. So the qualification to attain to that platform is mentioned that one should be anxious to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, as like we are anxious to eat, anxious for prasadam. So we have to be anxious to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So it is Nityam Bhagavat Sevaya. So by daily hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, it actually cleanses one of the lower modes of nature and situates one in the mode of goodness and ultimately in the Vishuddha Sattva. So that is the potency of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore we have to surround ourselves by transcendental sound vibration. So if we are not able to make it to class for some reason, then we should hear something on MP3 and get a daily dose or injection to stay sane. Otherwise we are insane. We'll be insane if we don't hear this message. And then in the 12th canto, in the 13th chapter which we'll come across, again the glories of the Bhagavatam are mentioned. That Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana and it is most dear to the Vaishnavas because it describes the pure and supreme knowledge of the Paramahamsas. This Bhagavatam reveals the means for becoming free from all material work together with the processes of transcendental knowledge, renunciation and devotion. Anyone who seriously tries to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, who properly hears and chants it with devotion, becomes completely liberated. And then also in the first canto, third chapter, text number 43, it's mentioned that Srimad Bhagavatam is as brilliant as the sun and it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Shri Krishna to his own abode. And it is meant for people who have lost their vision in this dense darkness of the age of Kali. So in darkness, one cannot have any vision. If you turn all the lights off, you cannot have any vision. So this age of Kali is compared to the sun being covered by the clouds. And therefore there is darkness. But when there is darkness, so people are attracted by the glimmer of the advancement of material civilization. So if we are not in touch with the Srimad Bhagavatam, then we'll be attracted by the glimmer of material existence, which is in the form of material advancement and, you know, technology, products, you know, whatever Kali Yuga can offer us in the form of sense gratification. Then we'll be attracted by that. But if we have access to the Srimad Bhagavatam, that is compared to the light which dispels this darkness. So this book is not an ordinary book. So therefore Srila Prabhupada stressed great emphasis on the distribution of Srimad Bhagavatam through various means and primarily through book distribution. So Srila Prabhupada said that even if somebody they take the Srimad Bhagavatam and they open it and they just read one verse, their life will be changed. So when we give somebody these books, we are actually changing the karma. Of course, this we cannot see. This is going on in the background. So we might lose hope, or because if we are not selling so many books. But in the background, as it's mentioned in the Nectar Devotion, how the prarabdha, aprarabdha karma, how all of that is actually getting destroyed by their coming in touch with the Srimad Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita or any of Srila Prabhupada's books. So all of this is taking place in the background. So therefore, we should not get discouraged. And then, and there's that verse, the chapter 1, canto 1, chapter 5, text 11, that on the other hand, that register which glorifies the Supreme Personality of God, even though it is not composed perfectly, can cause a revolution in the lives of the impious people. And Srila Prabhupada says, you know, I've translated this Srimad Bhagavatam into a foreign language, and there will be so many literary discrepancies. But still, people will take the subject matter seriously. So it is, you know, in other words, the qualification of a devotee is his purity or the strength with which we are presenting this knowledge. It is not in how, what fancy ways we present Krishna consciousness. Of course, that is nice if you can present Krishna consciousness. If you know the, if you know what's happening out there in the material world, and if you can present Krishna consciousness, giving solutions to the material problems, that's good. But if you only just, you know, if you just focus on the fancy stuff, what's going on out there, without the real, without the crux of it, Srimad Bhagavatam, then it won't have, the preaching won't be very potent. So, again, coming back to this verse, as we said before, Srimad Bhagavatam contains 10 topics. So the first is Sarga, or the creation, or the ingredients of the cosmos. Second is the Sarga, or the secondary creation. Then the third is Sthanam, or the maintenance of the planetary systems, or maintenance of the creation. And the fourth is Poshanam, or the Raksham, or protection. Then the fifth is Utaya, or the creative impetus. And then the sixth topic is Manvantare, or, you know, the politics, or the change of all the Manus taking place in the universe. And then the seventh is Ishanuk, or the sign, the description of the signs of God, of the incarnations of the Lord. And then the eighth is Nirodho, or the withdrawal or the winding up of the cosmic manifestation. And the ninth is Mukti, or liberation. And the tenth is Ashraya, or the Samabhonam. So in this verse it is described that in each age the infallible Lord. So Krishna is called Achyuta, or infallible. So there are also two classes of living entities. There's the fallible, and then there's the infallible living entity. So the living entities in the material world are classified as fallible because we have fallen down from our original position and we have accepted a material body which is subject to the influence of time and therefore undergoes the six changes. So you know the six changes: birth, growth, production of byproducts, sustenance, dwindling, and ultimately vanishing. So we are going through these six transformations. And we are also not in line with the purpose of creation. So the, on the other hand, the infallible living entities are those who are in line with the purpose of creation. In other words, who are serving the Supreme Lord. And they are situated in spiritual bodies. But then Krishna is also called as Achyuta because when Krishna comes to this material world, he is not affected by the three modes of nature, or he is not affected by time, and he appears in his original body. So we see when Krishna took birth, in the prison cell of Kamsa, he appeared in his original body as Krishna, you know, baby form. And then he exhibited his Vishnu feature, Narayan feature. So, you know, he did not appear like the way we appeared. The way we appear. You know, covered in mucus, you know, feces, and, you know, just terrible, in a terrible way. And we appear crying. But Krishna did not appear like that. Krishna was fully decorated when he appeared. And Krishna is always ever fresh. So his activities are ever fresh. His holy name is always ever fresh. We can chant the same name. Therefore, Krishna is called Achyuta. And Krishna is also Achyuta because Nitya Nityanam Chaitanya Chaitanam, that Krishna maintains everyone else also and is the supreme living entity. So here it's mentioned how that in each age the Lord appears in different incarnations. So the incarnations of the Lord are infinite, as the waves of the ocean are infinite. Similarly, the incarnations of the Lord are infinite. So Krishna or his incarnations are not just limited in human society. They can come in any society, in the society of animals or humans. So here we see he appears amongst the animals. So he appeared as Varahadev. That's an example. Then he appeared amongst human beings, you know, appeared as Krishna, Balram. He appeared then amongst sages as Naranarayan Rishi. And he appeared even amongst demigods. So we see that, in other words, Krishna is the source of all incarnations. Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. So we see that there are actually different kinds of incarnations. There is the Purusha avatars for the purpose of creation and the maintenance of the creation. So the three Vishnus. There is the Guna avatars, the Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, who are in charge of the various qualities of the of nature or the modes of nature. They are the Leela avatars. And Shaktyavesha avatars are those who are empowered to perform a certain function. We see like Lord Buddha. And then there's the Yuga avatars. So, but the whole idea behind that is to give protection. So, but interestingly enough, Krishna, why Krishna appears? Krishna ultimately appears for his pleasure and for the pleasure of his devotees. So, but the protection aspect is carried out by his expansions or by his plenary portions. So, but Krishna primarily appears to appease, for his pleasure, to carry out his pastimes in Vrindavan and also to please his devotees. So, but at the same time, he is killing the demons. But he does not need to, he can even kill the demons through material nature, through, you know, flick of a tsunami or anything. The demons can be wiped out. But Krishna primarily comes to please his devotees, but simultaneously he also annihilates them. But that annihilation is done through the Vishnu forms. Because when Krishna comes, all these avatars are actually situated in his body. So when he's actually killing them, the Vishnu forms are actually doing that. So I'll just stop here. It's 8:30. Any questions or comments or corrections? Yes, Prabhu. I can't remember all that, I'll be speculating. So maybe someone else knows. Mahatma Prabhu, you know the answer to his questions? Answers?
Yeah, he went to Gopur from Mathura and entered Mohan.
Yeah.
And then from Gopur to Nandigram.
Yeah, we'll have to look at Krishna book too. Yeah, he went to Gokul pretty much straight after he was born. So that's the answer to that one. As far as the other questions, so you can read Krishna book, it's all there. I can't remember off my head. Yeah. Anything else? Yes, Prabhu.
Go out of this spirituality into the world and say everything is polluted. Also, it's very bad. The impressions every day, it's get polluted. You said you refer to dose. What is the kind of dose you need to give? Okay. Can you just elaborate?
Okay, we need a dose.
Put it in the concentration and put it in the focus on spirituality.
Yeah, okay. So, if somebody is sick, you know, when we fall sick, then we take treatment, right? So we go to the doctor very enthusiastically and eagerly to accept the treatment, and we very enthusiastically accept all his rules and regulations. So the doctor will give you do's and don'ts. Do this, don't do that. But because we know we are sick, we want to get cured, therefore we will take the prescription of the doctor and adhere to that. So the first step in understanding is we have to understand that we are, because we have rebelled against Krishna, we are like mad. We are in an abnormal condition of madness. So that's the first step. Unless we understand that we are sick or there's something wrong with us, we will not apply the cure, or we won't even look for the cure, or even if we look for the cure, we won't apply it to the full degree because we are not fully convinced that we are sick. So that's the first step. And even Queen Kunti says we have to be first materially exhausted. So when we are materially exhausted, when we understand that there is no happiness in this material world, then we will look for the solution. You know, one has to understand the evils of birth, death, old age and disease. So that's the first step. So then the second, once you understand that I'm not well, then we will actually take the cure. And the cure is, you know, the process of devotional service or Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. That's the cure. So that's very nicely described in the Nectar of Devotion. So then we will follow all these rules. So our dose is, you know, rise early in the morning, chant Hare Krishna. Hear the Srimad Bhagavatam if possible. If not, if you can't make it to class, then you hear on tape, and in you associate with devotees, and you serve the devotees, and you serve the temple. Put it in practical ways, and you go for Harinam with Harinam Ananda. Then you'll be safe. Then you're taking your dose. Yeah, it's a Nityam Bhagavat Seva. You have to do it every day.
For the teaching and distribution of books, for the service.
Yeah, further. If you want to make rapid advancement, then you spread Krishna's glories to your best capacity. Anything else? Okay. Ganesha Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.